Hello, and welcome to the second of four exciting NABBW teleseminars that we are hosting this month. In a moment, I will introduce our guest, Lynn Tolson. Lynn, a social worker, victim advocate, and author of the book, Beyond the Tears, A True Survivor's Story, will be talking to us this evening on her topic of domestic violence. Specifically, we've titled it, Why Does She Stay? Why Doesn't He Stop? But before we get to this vital topic, let me introduce myself and do a bit of housekeeping. For those of you who do not know me, I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com, and we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, and I know that a number of you on the call are not, you are welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW website, which you can use to join. This teleseminar is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have approximately 75 teleseminars, which we've done in the past, which are available via written transcript and audio recording. These are yours with membership in NABBW. You won't see these teleseminars if you're not a member because they are archived in the members-only area. But there is a lot of content on the site, if you should go there, that's available for anyone to look at and enjoy and get value from. I mentioned that we're doing four teleseminars this month, so let me take a minute to tell you about what else we have been and will be talking about this month. Last night we talked with NABBW Associate Judith Shervin and her husband, Jim Schnikowski, about their new online training conference that they're calling Bridging Heart and Marketing 4. It's 4 like IV because it's the fourth of these that they've done. And their concept of building a business based on service, not selling. And then, of course, tonight we're talking with Lynn Tolson. In 2 weeks, on Thursday, October 21st, we will be talking about sex with Dr. Dori Lynn. Dr. Dori is a practicing psychologist and life coach who is committed to helping people have better relationships and fulfilling sex lives. You may have seen her on Good Morning America, MSNBC, CNN, or Fox News. She and I will be discussing her newest book, Sex for Grownups. Dr. Dori reveals the truths, lies, and must-tries for great sex after 50. That call will be at 8 p.m. Eastern. And a week later, on Thursday, October 28th, we will be talking about making money with author Mary Beth Izard, whose book is called Boomerpreneurs, How Baby Boomers Can Start Their Own Businesses, Make Money, and Enjoy Life. Her topic that evening will be 3 Mistakes Boomers Must Avoid When Starting a Business. I do hope that you think these events, all free teleseminars on what I think are hot topics, are going to be interesting and beneficial for you. Now, as to the format of the call today, get yourself comfortable and make sure that in addition to having something to drink, you have paper and pencil to take notes because the topics we're going to cover are fascinating and I know that you'll want to take notes. Close the door if you can so you won't be disturbed because we're going to be covering a lot of ground quickly and I'd hate for you to miss anything important. I'll be introducing victim advocate and author Lynn Tolson in a moment and she and I will spend about 30 minutes discussing domestic violence. Specifically, as I mentioned before, the topic is, why does she stay? Why doesn't he stop? During this time, your lines will be muted. If a question comes to your mind during that period, either write it down to ask later, or better yet, type it into the box on your computer screen. I'll be able to see the questions that you send in to me via that box, and when appropriate, I'll pass them on to Lynn. After our initial discussion, we will open the call to questions from those of you listening on the call tonight, and I hope that you will have many of them. Now, without further delay, please let me introduce Lynn Tolson, and we'll launch right into our discussion. Lynn spent her first 18 years in the Northeast. She then moved to the Southwest, where she engaged in careers in real estate and property management. During these years, she survived post-traumatic stress disorder, which manifested in addictions and suicide attempts. Through the therapeutic process, she determined the causes of her dysfunction and was able to achieve a life that reflects health and happiness. Her memoir, Beyond the Tears, A True Survivor Story, illustrates physical, emotional, and spiritual transformation. Lynn returned to college in her 40s to earn a degree in social work. She describes herself as an ordinary citizen with an overwhelming mission, which is to confront violence against women and children. She says that, given that sexual assault, including incest, is a social problem, my goals are to bring awareness to the public and to be an advocate for the victims. She continues, using my life experience and social work education, I hope to offer information that will improve the quality of life for survivors. Perhaps the future will hold enough social change to reduce the need for real stories of recovery and sites such as Beyond the Tears, A True Survivor's Story. Lynn sees her purpose as Lynn C. Tolson in her initials, LCT, learning, creating, teaching, to provide empowerment of our minds, bodies, and spirits. Her goal is for our generation to break the silence that surrounds sexual assault and incest so that future generations may live in peace. To this end, she started the Project for Tears, with TEARS being an acronym for Telling Everyone About Rape and Suicide. Her mission, to comfort victims by sharing her story, confront violence by breaking the silence, challenge society via information and action, so no shed tear is wasted. Lynn currently resides in the Rocky Mountain region with her husband and two West Highland White Terriers. She is writing a book about her breast cancer experience, which includes the use of art as a healing medium. Lynn, welcome to the call today.
Hi, Anne. Thank you for having me tonight.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you, Lynn. Before I launch into our questions, why don't I give you an opportunity to say something about your book and how listeners can get a copy?
Oh, okay. Well, Beyond the Tears, A True Survivor Story is available as a paperback through Amazon and Barnes & Noble, of course, but also I have a limited number of copies available that I can sign and send directly. So someone would contact me via lynn.tolson@gmail.com, and we can talk about the process of getting a signed copy to somebody. And I also just launched it as a download on scribd.com. So a reader could purchase a copy that is available to read on their desktop.
Excellent. All right. I've got lots of questions for you, Lynn, so let's get started here. And I think perhaps we ought to start at the beginning with a definition of domestic violence.
Okay. Well, state laws do vary in definition, but generally the definition of domestic violence is when one person uses inappropriate power and control over an intimate partner. Now, in the definitions that vary by law, what is described is, for example, what is an intimate partner? So the definitions by law go into great detail, but that's the general definition. Domestic violence occurs when one person uses inappropriate power and control over an intimate partner. Also, domestic violence is a pattern of abusive behaviors, so that perhaps one incident may be indeed considered domestic violence, but what is looked at in terms of the legal definition is a pattern of behavior. These behaviors may include verbal abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, economic abuse, and emotional abuse. Another definition of domestic violence that's a little bit softer and more for a layperson versus legalese comes from John Bradshaw, and he was touted for coming up with the theory of the inner child. John Bradshaw is the author of Homecoming and Creating Love, and he says, in his words, "I consider anything that violates a person's sense of self to be violence. Such action may not be directly physical or sexual, although it quite often is. Violence occurs when a more powerful and knowledgeable person destroys the freedom of a less powerful person for whom he or she is significant. So in defining domestic violence, I know you read Beyond the Tears, and there's a section in there where I say, oh, no, I'm not being abused. I'm not being beat with a broom. He doesn't kick me down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not violence. And then I go on to learn from my counselor that the verbal, emotional, economic, and sexual abuse that I'm experiencing is indeed domestic violence. So that's something I'd like to get across. You know, we have an image of a bruised and battered person in mind when we think of domestic violence, when in fact the bruises can be internal.
All right, so we're talking then, what you're saying is that there's a lot of what's important in whether it's abuse or not has to do with the concept of power and control?
Yes. That's one of the theories, is that is the use of power and control over someone more vulnerable. And in fact, the Domestic Abuse Intervention Project came up with something called the Power and Control Wheel. And it shows, if you can envision a pie, and there are pieces of the pie that demonstrate power and control. And some of those pieces would include how someone who perceives himself as more powerful would use intimidation over someone else, or would use emotional abuse, or would use isolation as part of exerting power,
mm-hmm.
you know, telling someone where she can or can't go. In Beyond the Tears, I describe how I moved away from my family, such as it was at the time, farther and farther out of town into the desert. And there I was on 2.5 acres of desert land with this man who was abusing me, but I did not realize it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the pattern of him moving in on me and then moving out to a place where I was isolated and virtually, even if I knew I needed help, mm-hmm. would not have the ability to seek help.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, other parts of power and control is using economic abuse, where perhaps someone has control of the finances,
mm-hmm.
and is telling someone that they have to account for every penny, and using coercion and threats is another part. Early in the book, in Beyond the Tears, you're wondering, why did I marry this man who has already been offensive and degrading? And he had said to me, if you don't marry me, I'll kill myself.
Right.
And little did I know at the time that that was a pattern of behavior where he was exerting himself, deliberately using and manipulating me through coercion and threats. So those are some of the examples of the use of power and control.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there typical characteristics of a victim and characteristics of an offender, or is that too impossible to break it down that generically?
No, that has been established. There are definitely characteristics of a victim and characteristics of an offender. Would you like me to go into them?
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay. So a victim would have the characteristics of being, number one, having low self-esteem, being socially isolated or socially inept, you know. So those two combined, you think in terms of maybe a wallflower kind of a situation, and someone is thinking, oh, nobody will ever love me. Is loyal. A victim remains loyal to the perpetrator of violence no matter what, and until she gets help.
Mm-hmm.
And she believes the traditional stereotypes And those stereotypes include male privilege, that the male is the kingdom, the king of the castle, and the traditional role of the woman being being at home barefoot and pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
A victim is often compliant with the trivial demands. Off record, we talked about the demanding personality, and a victim of violence will respond to those demands as if it's nothing. I talk in Beyond the Tears how the man I was married to would make trivial demands, like go get me a pack of cigarettes, get a beer out of the fridge, make me dinner, what's for dinner, and then he would snap his fingers. And as a victim, I was compliant to those demands.
Mm-hmm.
A victim believes the myths of domestic violence. Some of the myths being that, oh, I must have done something wrong. Or when he says to her, you made me do this to you.
Mm-hmm.
No one can make another person do something offensive to her.
Okay.
In other words, she's convinced that she is responsible for the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Another characteristic of a victim is that she may have witnessed or experienced abuse as a child. And I want to go back to John Bradshaw. He says, anyone who witnesses violence is a victim of violence. I think that's really important because
it is.
We think that a 3 or 4 year old who may have witnessed a pattern of domestic violence in terms of their parents, and then maybe the parents got divorced, perhaps they think the child's forgotten it by now. But by then, the child has already been traumatized by seeing the violence, even under the age of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So a victim may have witnessed or experienced abuse as a child, and a victim also attempts to manipulate the environment in order to maintain safety. In Beyond the Tears, I write extensively about what I observe about my mother, and there's one scene in the book where she's leaving my father,
mm-hmm.
and even as she's leaving him, she's cleaning the house that she's leaving, because cleaning was her way of maintaining control.
Okay.
So that's what it means by attempts to manipulate the environment to maintain safety.
Mm-hmm.
If it's clean enough, he won't hurt me. If I look good enough, he won't hurt me. So now, are we ready to go on to the offender?
Oh, sure. I think we need to see the other side.
Okay. Often, but not always, but often, the offender has been abused as a child. The offender is emotionally dependent and, in terms of isolation, may look to the partner, his wife, as the only source of emotional support. Alcohol is usually involved, but not always. So, generally, an offender may drink or use drugs excessively. An offender loses temper frequently and early. Early meaning, not able to count to 10.
Mm-hmm.
An offender is often contradictory and has an unpredictable personality, like a jack in the box. You just never know when he's going to strike. Displays an unusual amount of jealousy. And again, in the book, I was mistaking the outbursts of jealousy as love for me.
Mm-hmm.
And even my friends were saying, he's possessive because, well, he must love you a lot.
Uh-huh.
That's not healthy. Has weapons. An offender often has weapons and threatens to use them. And, even his body can be used as a weapon. He has a limited capacity for delayed gratification. He wants what he wants, and he wants it now.
Mm-hmm.
And the offender often commits acts of violence against people, pets, and objects. Your things, you being mm-hmm. a victim of violence,
right?
Your things are not respected. They're often broken. And we saw that in Beyond the Tears when I had left for a while and I came back and my objects are missing
mm-hmm.
or they're under the bed. And maybe not or given away. My rock and roll collection was given away.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we don't have to think of a guitar being smashed or bottles being broken. Just the lack of respect for someone else's property.
Okay.
Is a characteristic. So that about covers it, the characteristics of victims and offenders.
All right. That's very good. I think it's important for us to see that there are those types of clues that we can look for something like a person who loses their temper easily or you know, the contradictions and unpredictability and jealousy, for example, in the offender that you mentioned. Are there warning signs that a person should look for? I guess maybe when they're either developing a relationship with someone, you know, say dating someone, or what about warning signs that a friend of yours might be in a situation where they're being a victim?
Sure, and this is something I wanted to talk about because, you know, as baby boomer women, we may be re-entering the dating scene for one reason or another,
mm-hmm.
and I think the world has changed a lot. I think it's faster, bigger. There's more of it. There's so much information coming at us, and we are responsible for ourselves and have to learn how to take care of ourselves. So in terms of some of the warning signs, well, number one, a warning sign is cruelty to animals. And, you know, in reading Beyond the Tears, you saw that with both my father and the man that I married.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that was a warning sign. But now, there, you know, with more research and more studies, it's definitely a correlation between cruelty to animals and the ability to be an offender of domestic violence. Other warning signs that he has a volatile temper. We talked
mm-hmm.
about that, you know, easily irked. Uses physical violence. Physical violence, again, doesn't mean, you know, he beats me with a broom or kicks me
mm-hmm.
down the stairs. It could be blocking your way in a doorway. So
mm-hmm.
that's the body being used to exert power over you. Say you're trying to exit
mm-hmm.
the bedroom and he's standing there and saying, no, you know, you stay right where you are. He's using his body as a weapon and his words as a threat to have power and control. If he has unfounded jealousy, you know, the scenario where you may be innocently talking to a male friend at a party and your date perceives it as a threat to him and a relationship, and it's unfounded jealousy. Definitely a warning sign. Constantly criticizing you, telling you what to wear, how
mm-hmm.
to look, what to say. Or if you are with somebody and you're getting the feeling that whatever you do is not good enough,
okay.
that's a warning sign.
Mm-hmm.
Communicating by giving orders. And I talked about that, you know, where his manner of communication is get in the car, get out of the car, go get me cigarettes, go
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
If he uses violence to solve problems, you know, using violence to solve problems is not a good way for conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And There are a lot of skills and tools and techniques that we can learn for conflict resolution. Isolating you from family or friends.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw an example of that where in Beyond the Tears, I want to go with my family for an Easter dinner, and somehow it gets manipulated where I'm going to an Easter buffet alone with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a person is being caught in the web, so to speak, and that web tends to be so isolating and sticky, you can't get out of it.
Exactly.
Another good warning sign is blames others for his or her behavior. And in Beyond the Tears, I learned that the man I married had been married before,
mm-hmm.
and he had 4 children, and he's blaming everybody else. Oh, she won't let me see him. They had the marriage annulled. And everywhere I turned to try to determine some information about him, he blamed others for his behavior. I didn't get that until a decade later.
Okay.
No, it didn't click. But that's a good warning sign. Another warning sign is he minimizes or denies his behavior. One of the situations where I talk about being really thin, and he is, touching me in such a way that it hurts or that I bruise. And I say, ouch, that hurts. And he says, oh, it wouldn't hurt so much if you weren't such a skinny runt.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, he's blaming me for being hurt when in fact it was his behavior.
Right.
And of course, verbal and or emotional abuse is definitely a warning sign. Name calling is obviously a warning sign of relationship abuse. So generally, when you're thinking of going on a date or being out with somebody, or if you're witnessing the behavior in one of your friends, if you see one of your friends being verbally abused, or you see any of these other warning signs, it's not to be taken lightly, because it has been shown that if it's determined that he can get away with one behavior, it will escalate to another behavior,
mm-hmm.
and then escalate to yet another behavior. So it's a cycle of violence.
I think that's really crucial to be aware of that. But the question that I think is so imperative for me to get answer from you on that is, what can you do if you or someone that you know is experiencing domestic violence? Because I think what you've been telling me is that if I was observing a relationship with a good friend of mine who's, dating someone new, and I believe that the way that he's talking to her indicates violent tendencies toward that he's being abusive, and the fact that you're saying one of the tendencies of the victim is low self-esteem would seem that if I say, I'm not sure that guy's the best person for you to be dating, let's try to find you someone better. I believe that a typical response from my friend would be, because of the low self-esteem, saying, oh, no, he's really just teasing me or something like that. And, the low self-esteem would cause potentially, in my understanding of this, her to deny that there was something wrong going on. So if I'm correct about that, how can you help someone who you think is experiencing domestic violence?
Well, you are correct about that, and that was one of the scenes in Beyond the Tears where my friend is saying to me, Lynn, he's abusing you. And I say, no, he's not. He talks to me like that all the time. And then it wasn't until some time later when I'm in counseling that I learned that what I was experiencing was indeed abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she took a big leap in telling me that, and I was sort of ready to hear it. What you can do, well, the emotional content I'll answer that first on the emotional level. I have an acronym called Be Real. And what you can do is to be real with her. Believe her and believe in her. Educate yourself and then share your knowledge. Reassure her that it was not her fault. Empower with information and resources. Ask what you can do and do your best. And then listen without judgment to what is being said. Often the person who's experiencing this abuse does not have the wherewithal to seek help.
Mm-hmm.
And you may be have to be her silent advocate. You know, before you jump to the conclusion that he's abusing her and say to her, I think you need to leave that relationship, perhaps have some more tools as to how you can handle the situation. And those tools are available by seeking out sites such as the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, that's ncadv.org, and on that site, a person can find exact role-playing scenarios as to how to approach someone who you think may be being abused.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Also, know what the resources are in your area, even before you suspect a friend may be being abused.
Mm-hmm.
The resources can be found by doing a Google search for the Coalition Against Domestic Violence in your state. So I live in Colorado. It would be the Colorado Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And on that site, I would find what resources are available in my area. And those resources help to educate others so that when they witness what may be domestic violence, they have the education and knowledge to approach the person that they want to approach with that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Okay.
Now, I have a lot of other questions here, but let me ask you, what does religion, have anything to do with domestic violence, or is that totally unrelated?
Oh, it's very related. But that's a very broad question.
Okay.
Gosh, I wrote a whole essay on that. In terms of the faith that I grew up in, where we were taught to be loyal, to be subservient, to believe traditional roles.
Mm-hmm.
Religion was very much a part of the cause and effect of domestic violence, in that I thought that, you know, as a religious person, you're supposed to forgive and forget.
Right.
And that kind of makes you, the person who's the victim, a sacrifice to domestic violence. So the answer is yes, religion has a lot to do with it, how you were raised.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a broad question. Is there a more definitive question that you have, like in the chat room?
Well, let me check here and see if. I guess more of it would more. Let's get into if I'm following my religion, which says that, as you talked about, you know, being loyal to your husband,
mm-hmm.
being supportive of my husband, and therefore the concepts that you talked about, turning the other cheek, I think is very much of a.
Oh.
So does that mean that religion causes us to be, you know, we had that question at the beginning of the title of the show, of the call is, why does she stay? Why doesn't he stop? Would we be able to say that some of the things that we're raised to believe, some of which might come out of our religion, have to do with why we stay if we're being amused?
Absolutely. That's what I was trying to say, was that, you know, some of the beliefs that we are raised with in our religion may cause us to stay in a relationship that's unhealthy. And the question that you have to ask yourself is my life worth giving up for this relationship,
mm-hmm.
for the sake of religion? You know, just if you leave a relationship that's unhealthy, that does not mean you're ungodly. That means that you are seeking the love that you need, and it needs to be nurtured. And if the way to nurture it is by leaving the relationship, then that's not being a heretic to your religion.
Mm-hmm. All right. Excellent.
So the other side of that, turn the other cheek, is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that's a principle that people live by.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if someone's being verbally or emotionally abused, the question is that person who's the abuser doing unto you as you would do unto them? And if the answer is no, then you're in an unsafe, unhealthy relationship.
All right. So that's a good key question for a person to ask if you're trying to figure out if you are in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody feels unsafe in a relationship, you know, that's generally a gut instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want from your relationship is to feel safe, to feel secure, to feel nurtured, to feel nourished, to feel love. And if you don't have those feelings, then your religion may not be serving you in the way that your religion could be serving you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Well, as long as I ask the question of why does she stay, and let's go to the title again, and let's ask the other half of it. Why doesn't he stop?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is that we live in a society that cultivates male privilege. And by male privilege, I mean something we touched on earlier, where the male believes that he's the king of the castle, and she is a handmaiden or a servant,
mm-hmm.
and that's how she is treated. You know, he makes all the big decisions. He acts like the master of the castle. He is the one who is defining men's and women's roles. And that's just an issue that comes from our society. And I think that our society is not prepared to blast through the male privilege. The way to blast through it is by breaking the silence and challenging society and asking the question, why doesn't he stop?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't stop because his feelings of male privilege does not give him the wherewithal to think that he has to stop. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are other reasons. There are, that may sound like excuses, but there are chemical imbalances, there are substance abuse, there's alcohol abuse, there's what we touched on earlier, witnessing domestic violence as a child, so you think that that is the way to deal with the world is through violence, and because we men can get away with it,
mm-hmm.
okay? Those are reasons why he does not stop. There are not enough resources to teach men anger management skills,
mm-hmm.
conflict resolution skills, or even to role model what is a healthy relationship. So often we hear, you know, we'll be talking amongst ourselves and we'll say, oh, well, look, she, you know, she's bruises. I know he's hurting her.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other in the group, you'll say, well, why doesn't she just leave?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we should be saying as a society, why doesn't he stop? And those are some of the reasons, because it's ingrained in our society, which is based on a patriarchal society where women are subservient to men.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are many PhDs out there who have done this, you know, theoretical search and study, but that's it in a nutshell. That's all I can, you know, have time mm-hmm. for in this short segment.
All right. Well, I'm curious about anyone that I believe that I've known who's been in an abusive relationship. It seems that the only recourse is to get out of the relationship. But I'm curious, is it ever possible that if you have a couple that are married and they're in this cycle where she's the victim and he's the abuser, could they possibly have a happy ever after ending where they go to counseling and they both learn to change their behaviors? Or do you think that's a dream that we aren't going to see in our lifetime?
No, I'm very optimistic. Definitely. If both partners are willing and they want a healthy relationship and they have the desire, the determination, and the discipline to take on the task to go to therapy and to learn healthy relationship skills and conflict resolution, then it's definitely possible to learn new ways to get along in a relationship besides using violence.
Mm-hmm.
What is usually prescribed is therapy for individuals. You know, he'll go to a counselor, she'll go to a counselor, and then together as marriage counseling.
Mm-hmm.
It takes commitment as well. It takes a lot of courage. But if both parties are willing to do the work, it's definitely possible. What if it's a chemical imbalance? What if he has developed a chemical imbalance that causes the ability to lose temper quickly
mm-hmm.
and easily? You know, that could be a cause. I'm not minimizing domestic violence, but I don't want to sound totally pessimistic.
Okay.
You know, I think it is possible if both parties are willing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is good to hear. Certainly for anyone who's listening who is in a situation where they believe that they want to stay married and yet they are realizing that there's abuse going on, especially since you've clarified that abuse could be economic or emotional. It doesn't have to be just a physical abuse in order for it to be abuse. And I think that kind of has been the touchstone for what we think abuse is always physical. We don't realize that it can be verbal abuse or sexual or even the one that I thought was very important that you brought out was economic abuse. And I don't think that as many people realize that there is such a kind of abuse as that. But I've seen situations that involve that. So I know that can certainly be a way that abuse is implemented into a relationship. You mentioned the NCADV.org. Are there other places that people can go if they'd like to get more information?
Yes, the state coalitions for domestic violence. So whatever state you're in, you would do a search for the Coalition Against Domestic Violence. When you're doing the search, there are going to be hits for what's available in your area. A lot of the YWCAs in our country offer help for victims and offenders of domestic violence. In other words, they would offer counseling and other resources Some YWCAs have shelters available.
Mm-hmm.
Some have sessions available for men to attend that teach the power and control wheel. In other words, when you are doing this to your wife, do you realize that you're exercising power and control over her?
Mm-hmm.
So YWCA is a good resource as well. So I would start with the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, the State Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and the YWCAs.
Excellent. Now, earlier in our discussion, you talked about the importance of us as baby boomers, more the potential of baby boomer women going on dates and therefore getting ourselves into new relationships, which could be exposing ourselves to violence. Could you talk a little bit about how a woman can protect herself on a date?
Well, one of the first ways to protect yourself is to be aware. I mean, somebody who's listening now is protecting herself. She's getting new information that she may never have heard of before,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's just the cognizance, the awareness is key. The other part that's key is to be knowledgeable about some of the behaviors that may indicate that someone has a tendency toward violence, such as the constant criticism or isolating someone from friends and families, you know, making themselves the focus of your attention versus leaving you open to make your own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Some women may think that it's charming and chivalrous for a man to be making all the decisions about where you're going to go and what you're going to eat and what are you going to do on a date, when in fact, if you don't feel like your opinion matters,
mm-hmm.
then you may have an issue of safety down the line. And that's an intuitive question to ask yourself, you know, does my opinion matter? Is he hearing me? Is he listening to me? So, if you're asking if we have to learn karate, gosh, I have mixed feelings about that. You know, I don't like the idea that we have to be in a society where we have to learn to physically protect ourselves by carrying a weapon or learning karate or some martial arts.
Right.
At the same time, if you feel like you're a vulnerable person, why not? In Beyond the Tears, you know, I go from being a very thin, undeveloped young woman to someone who's getting strong. I mean, at 22, I could not run for my life if I had to. And I realize this, and I start going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not going to overpower a man, but I'm sure going to have the strength to stand up for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is it doesn't take a karate chop. It doesn't take a weapon. A lot of the way to protect yourself is to empower yourself with inner strength and with physical strength.
Excellent. Okay. Good answer there. Now, we talked about the different types of abuse. You talked about, you know, verbal, sexual, physical, economic, mm-hmm. emotional. Can you say, would there be a relationship between how does verbal abuse pertain to domestic violence? I'm not sure that everyone thinks of verbal abuse as violent behavior, and I'm afraid that society has trained us to ignore verbal abuse and think of it in terms of, you know, I was just joking around, you know, I didn't really mean it sort of thing. So, well,
yeah, that's a really good question. Yes, and tying society into that is really good. we are desensitized to verbal abuse, and we hear all these swear words, you know, and sometimes I find them coming out of my mouth mm-hmm. before thinking. You know, I'm not afraid to admit that I had to go to a counselor to learn what is verbal abuse and how not to use it, because I grew up in a very verbally abusive childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I heard things like, I hope you die, I hope you suffer. That's verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel put down, if name calling is involved, it's not a joke. This is serious verbal abuse. Your relationship is for nurturing, nourishment, and love. It's mm-hmm. not for being put down, criticized, and condemned. Now, the book that I recommend that clearly demonstrates verbal abuse is by Patricia Evans, and it's called The Verbally Abusive Relationship.
Okay. I've not heard of that book.
It's excellent.
All right.
And it will define for you what is and what isn't verbal abuse, and if it is verbal abuse, how to deal with it.
Excellent. Is there similar advice that you can give about emotional abuse, how that pertains to domestic violence, and how we can recognize what is emotional abuse?
Sure. Well, emotional abuse is when you are feeling humiliated, when you're feeling put down, when you're feeling the sense of mind games, like you say something and it's twisted around so that what you thought you said isn't what you said at all,
mm-hmm.
but yet you're like confused. Wait a minute, I didn't say that. And it comes back to you in a twisted sense mm-hmm. where it's thrown back in your face. That's part of emotional abuse. Making you feel guilty, making you think you are crazy. You know, you might hear a lot where he is saying to you, oh, that's not so, you're crazy. That's not so, you're psycho. You know, and then you begin to think, well, maybe I am crazy, so that you feel bad about yourself. And that is what emotional abuse feels like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feel humiliated. You feel like you're playing mind games. And that is part of an abusive relationship.
You know, as we're talking about this, I find myself wondering, why don't we teach about this in schools? Why don't kids, when they're in high school or something like that, learn? Why don't we have courses about this? It seems like it's a crucial thing that I don't think anyone actually learns about unless they get into college and take courses in psychology or sociology or something like that. I think we need to teach it younger, but maybe that's
no,
a topic
right.
for another day.
You're right. And there is a resource if anyone's listening and perhaps they have teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And a resource that I like is called the Date Safe Project.
Excellent.
DateSafeProject.org. And that is developed to teach teenagers and college students how to be safe on a date or at parties and the difference between a healthy and an unhealthy relationship.
Excellent.
I would assume that, you know, women our age who are listening, you know, would have college students.
Mm-hmm.
So, That's a recommended resource.
Excellent. Now, I know that toward the end of your book, one of the things that comes out is that your counselor, Karen, suggests to you that you are a writer and that you should tell your story. And I suspect that is why you wrote the book, although I believe you've said that it took you years before you could actually write the story. But could you tell us a little bit about what made you decide to take her up on that challenge that you should tell this story? Because your story is an amazing story. I kept reading it and kept thinking, doesn't her life get any better? It just seems like you just went from a rock to a hard place.
I say that in the book. I think that it was as if I was letting my life was sweeping me away,
mm-hmm.
rather than me taking control of my life, and also that I had the notion that every minor inconvenience was a major catastrophe. But as you see towards the end of the book, sure, you know, it gets better, and I learn new concepts about love and relationships. But I wrote the book because I did have a desire to share a message of healing from trauma,
mm-hmm.
and that message became too strong to ignore. So the book became a mission. And the mission is because, just what you said, we're not taught these issues when we're younger. Therefore, sexual assault, domestic violence, addiction, and suicide become unsolved social problems. And this is tragedy because we've lost human potential. When someone has been beaten physically, verbally, or emotionally to the point where she has no self-esteem, her human potential is lost. She's not able to carry herself confidently into the world. So I saw the need for real stories of recovery. I mentioned research earlier, you know, that someone else might be able to go into the study and the research of the sociology of the patriarchal society.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of research, but there are few true stories of recovery. And when I was seeking information and a real voice, there were very few books available. There was actually nothing available that I can think of. The only book I could relate to at the time was I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings,
mm-hmm.
by Maya Angelou,
mm-hmm.
and it was sort of over my head. So that was one of the reasons why I took her up on her offer and decided to accept her challenge, and also that she was telling me that I had a gift for writing.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to receive that message 2 decades later and put pen to paper and tell the story.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I'm so glad you did. It's a very powerful story, and I think that everybody, man or woman, should read it, because I think it's very eye-opening. And the fact that you came out on the end as a survivor, I think, is a very important lesson for people to know that, you know, I was watching a show on Oprah yesterday.
Yeah.
That was about abuse. And I think that knowing that there was someone out there who went through this, one woman was on the show, a young woman who apparently had stayed home from school one day because she was going to commit suicide, and it happened to catch a show that Oprah did about abuse, and she found out she wasn't alone, and that gave her the ability, the will to live, to not kill herself, and just having her there to tell that story had Oprah in tears. So I think the same thing applies for the value of the book that you have, because it certainly is there to tell people who might be in similar situations that there is hope, and that they can come out okay on the other side. One of the things that I'm looking at our time, and I think we're not going to be able to get to questions from the audience, but I do want to ask you to tell us a little bit about your Project for Tears.
Okay, well, the Project for Tears, that stands for Telling Everyone About Rape and Suicide, and basically it is my mission to comfort victims by sharing my stories, breaking the silence that we have, and challenging society via information and action. And that's exactly what you're doing by hosting this seminar, is you're allowing me to comfort others by letting them know that they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowing me to break the silence. And we're challenging society by talking about some of the standards in society that allow domestic violence and sexual assault to continue. Now, the young lady that you saw on Oprah, I know who she is. I mean, I know her personally.
Oh, really?
And she's 20. Yeah, she's 23 years old. The point that I want to make out is that when I was 23, nobody talked. There were no resources. And so the fact that she, as a 23-year-old, could have watched Oprah and she could have benefit kept her from doing what I did when I was 23, which was to attempt suicide. Mm-hmm. So in those ways, we have made great strides. You know, we are saving lives by talking about these issues. We still have a ways to go, but that is the upside, you know, that we are reaching people by having forums and venues and teleseminars that educate and inform.
Excellent. Well, Lynn, it's just been really wonderful talking to you. I want to thank you for being my guest and for this great discussion. And I want to remind everyone about your book, Beyond the Tears, A True Survivor Story, that it is available on Amazon both as paperback and at Kindle in Kindle format, and it's available also at bn.com, Barnes & Noble's website. And, of course, Lynn had that special offer that we discussed earlier, that she has a limited number of books in her own, of her books in her possession that she would sign and send to you for $22, including shipping, which I think would be really special situation to have a signed copy of. I love having books that authors have signed, so I think that's a wonderful offer that you're making, Lynn. And in order to find out about that, contact Lynn via her email address. That is Lynn, L-Y-N-N, dot Tolson, T-O-L-S-O-N, at gmail.com. Lynn, you also have a blog and a Facebook page, and then you were talking about that new site that you've put up. Would you go through those addresses for people?
Yes, a copy of the book is available at Scribd.com, S-C-R-I-B-D.com, and that makes the book available on your computer. You could either read it on Scribd on the site, or after purchasing, you can download it, and that way you have an electronic version. And the blog is beyondthetears.blogspot.com. And I update that quite regularly with information, resources, education, and insight about the topics that we're discussing tonight.
Mm-hmm. And then your Facebook page.
I'm on Facebook. I don't know. Just search for Lynn Tolson. I think my profile name is Lynn Tolson. I'm on Facebook a lot.
Okay.
So it's easy to find me there.
Excellent. Anything else that I haven't covered, Lynn, that you'd like to discuss before we close the call tonight?
No, I wish I could have been a little more eloquent about the issue of religion. I'd have to give that some more thought. But I just wanted to make it clear that often that is one of the reasons that we think, you know, why does she stay? Mm-hmm. And other than that, I really just want to thank you for having me on a teleseminar during October, which is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We can help each other by having awareness.
I so agree with that. That's the whole reason that I do these teleseminars. So thank you very much, Lynn. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And goodbye for now.
Okay, goodbye.